Gaza.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, as we do every week, were you involved last week in the Palestine-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's savage military attacks against them to force them out of their homes and annex their properties into Israel? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, why not? What is your reason not to?
Hello, listeners. I am Salma Abu Ayyash in Fort Deir Sharif. Today is Sunday, November 14th, 2009. I am a Palestinian from a village of mostly farmers outside of Hebron called Beit Umar. I was there this past summer, and what I saw was very painful. A village devastated under the claws of occupation. Beit Umar is surrounded by the wall from the western side, Gush Etzion and Efrat settlements from the north. The eastern side of the village is laced with barbed wire and the tallest Israeli army watchtower in the West Bank, and a gate which can be closed at any time, forbidding access on the main road into and out of the village. From the south, Karmi Tzur settlement. The settlement of Karmi Tzur was built on stolen land from Beit Umar. The first piece belonged to two families. One of them is mine, actually, the Abu Ayyash family. Beit Umar is one of the villages that have Motorola security systems to protect the settlement of Karmi Tzur. Motorola, as some may know, has acted always as the technology arm of the Israeli defense or offense army, helping Israel carry out its repressive policies towards the Palestinians. In return, Motorola profits handsomely from selling the products developed for suppressing the Palestinians to a worldwide market. The quote-unquote war on terror is indeed a big business. For example, Motorola's security radar camera system used in the settlements and apartheid wall built by Israel in the West Bank is being considered by the U.S. for deployment on the Mexican border. Next time you contemplate buying a Motorola phone, think twice about it. This summer, every single child I spoke to in Beit Umar talked about terrifying encounters with the army. My family members spoke of random house arrests and soldiers barging into their homes and holding them hostage while they are supposedly setting up traps for mostly kids that throw stones and Molotov explosives at the soldiers' watchtower. In one case, a cousin of mine was kept in her bedroom while the soldiers napped in her living room and used her house as a rest stop. I missed an incursion into my aunt's house at dusk by minutes, supposedly again kids throwing stuff at the tower from my aunt's garden. Four jeeps and about a dozen soldiers barged into the house, and one of them, a Russian import as detected from his accent, put his rifle against my aunt's husband's chest. His daughter collapsed in tears while they searched the house. My aunt fears that they are after her sons. She has four sons who have been often approached by Israeli Secret Service to recruit them as informants. That never worked, so arresting them may be the only way to get them to the station. This is a serious problem in our community. There is no hope, no future, only humiliation and suppression. So some young men do indeed choose to collaborate with Israel. Beyond the Rhetoric is the title of a presentation with Becca Wolf. She is international coordinator and co-founder of the Palestine Solidarity Project, a Palestinian organization based in my village of Beit Umar and dedicated to supporting popular resistance to the occupation. This talk is what everyone needs to know about current realities of the Israeli occupation and prospects for a just resolution in Palestine. The presentation will happen on Thursday, November 19th at 7 p.m. First Parish in Cambridge Unitarian Universalist on 3 Church Street in Harvard Square, Cambridge, Massachusetts. This is sponsored by the Justice in the Middle East Task Force at First Parish in Cambridge. For information about the PSP, visit PalestineSolidarityProject.org. The event is free and open to the public. Two more announcements before we start our reporting. We are fortunate to have two amazing conferences this coming weekend in Massachusetts. First of all, for our dear activists working on justice for Palestine and for a better future for everyone on that piece of land, Students for Justice in Palestine, a Hampshire student group, present the Campus Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Conference. You can visit them on their website, hsjp.org. That's for Hampshire Students Justice Palestine. The conference will run from November 20th, through the 22nd. Students, faculty, and staff from around the country who are engaged in Palestine solidarity activism will converge for a conference on campus boycott, divestment, and sanctions, known as BDS. This conference has three key goals: to co-educate and share resources amongst campus organizers on the process of initiating BDS campaigns on campuses, to strategize tactics to address the needs of different campuses in carrying out BDS campaigns, and most importantly, to bring together Palestine Solidarity campus groups that have or have not met under a larger network in order to strive towards a coordinated national BDS campaign. One might ask, why boycott? Given that political pressure and soft pressure and international pressure on Israel have miserably failed, this is the only non-violent way to get Israel to do anything about its racist apartheid regime and occupation. It is the strongest message of rejection from the people of this earth of a state based on ethnic discrimination, which basically amounts to racism, and a state that maintains one of the most brutal occupations in our recent history. The call for BDS is rooted in universal principles of human rights, equality, and self-determination and dignity, with a vision for a future for both people as equals, not for an apartheid state based on religion and nationalism as it is now. Actually, the call, the Palestinian call from 2005 for global BDS campaign is rooted in all these principles. And this conference is endorsed by the Palestinian Boycott National Committee. The second event is the conference by the Middle East Studies Association. It includes a Middle Eastern book exhibit, a film festival, and even childcare. Panels include scholars from all over the world discussing issues related to Arab culture, literature, film, politics, Israel and Palestine, Iran, Islam, you name it. It is also on the same weekend as the BDS conference in Hampshire College, but it extends from Saturday, November 21st, starting at 10 a.m. with films, 4 p.m. with the big book fair, and 5 p.m. when the first session starts, until Tuesday, 1 p.m. So you could possibly do both conferences. You can visit them on mesa.arizona.edu. Click on Annual Meeting tab and choose Current Year. Panel topics include legislating Muslim women's rights, progress and challenges, national places and colonized spaces, the contest for Jerusalem over the last 100 years, featuring one of my favorite speakers, Salim Tamari, Muslim communities in Europe and North America, Orientalism, political film in the Middle East and the Maghreb, the Palestinian novel in Israel, Minor, Minority, and National Identity, 60 Years On, A Critical Revisiting of UNRWA for Palestine Refugees, Changing Futures, Youth in the Middle East, Class Conflict in Afghanistan, Perspective on Israel, Palestine, Being Palestinian, Being Kurdish, Quo Vadis Israel, which basically means, where are you heading, Israel? And between colonialism, authoritarianism, and political Islam, prospects for the Palestinian national movement after the war against Gaza, 2008-2009. I simply read maybe one-tenth of the panel titles that they have. It's really a huge conference, one of the biggest in the world on the Middle East. You can register on site at the Boston Marriott Copley Place on the fourth floor. And registration between Saturday and Tuesday begins around 8:30 a.m. and ends around 6 p.m. Tuesday, November 24th, incidentally, is free for students with a student ID. Registration fees are a little expensive, but as I said from my previous experience, this is one of the best conferences that handle all issues related to the Middle East and the Arab world. For a non-MESA member, it's $130. For students, it's $80. And now we turn to news from Palestine. Israeli occupation forces continue systematic attacks against Palestinian civilians and property in the occupied Palestinian territory and continue to impose a total blockade of the Gaza Strip. The weekly report from the Palestine Human Rights Center indicates that this past week only, six Palestinian civilians were wounded by Israeli forces in the West Bank. Five of these civilians were wounded when Israeli forces used force against peaceful demonstrations organized to protest the construction of the annexation wall in the West Bank, in Na'aleen and other villages. Israeli forces conducted 28 incursions into Palestinian communities in the West Bank and one in the Gaza Strip. Israeli forces arrested 40 Palestinian civilians, including 12 children. On this note, I would like to share some other information with you. According to the Palestine branch of the organization Defense for Children International, DCI, an average of 9,000 Palestinians are prosecuted in two Israeli military courts in the West Bank each year. Among them, an average of 700 children, some of them as young as 12. The most common offense these children are charged with is throwing stones. You can read more about Palestinian child prisoners and the systemic institutionalized ill-treatment and torture of Palestinian children by Israeli authorities on the DCI website. Go to dci-pal.org. Their latest report on child prisoners is on the main page. This week, the DCI is featuring a video on child detention in occupied territories. It's featuring Muhammad's story. Muhammad from the occupied West Bank was 14 years old when he was detained by Israeli forces in February 2008 and accused of throwing stones at the wall. Muhammad was beaten, interrogated in the absence of a lawyer, deceived into signing a confession, prosecuted in a military court, and sentenced to 4 months' imprisonment inside Israel. Whilst in prison, he received no education and no family visits. He was 14 then. You can go to youtube.com and simply search for child detention in OPT, colon, Muhammad's story. So youtube.com, child detention in OPT, colon, Muhammad's story. Muhammad is M-O-H-A-M-M-A-D, M-O-H-A-M-M-A-D. You can listen to his story on YouTube. And this is, again, the short video that the DCI is featuring. In addition to this, Muhammad and his mother are touring in the UK, apparently. Hopefully, we can do the same here in North America. And the BBC World Service has a video interviewing them. The video is on their website, and it was on November 5th. You can simply Google BBC World Service colon kids under arrest from November 5th. So again, Google BBC World Service kids under arrest November 5th. And I really urge you to watch these two videos on YouTube and the BBC website for the story of Muhammad. Man News Agency announced on November 2nd in its reports that Israel created a military court for Palestinian children. I read from the report, an Israeli judge has announced the establishment of a new military court dealing solely with sentencing of Palestinian children. Ma'ariv, the daily Hebrew language newspaper, wrote that from now on, Palestinian children will be brought in front of military judges under the new structure of a special military court to sentence children under the legal age of majority to avoid the recent situation where children have been brought to normal military courts. The sentencing of children under the legal age of majority in regular military courts constitutes a contravention of the Convention of the Rights of the Child, which Israel ratified in 1991. An inauguration ceremony for the new children's military court was held on Sunday at Ofer Prison in the West Bank, Ma'ariv said. More from the PCHR report. I don't know if I mentioned this. What I'm reading to you is a weekly report from the Palestine Center for Human Rights, and I'll tell you more about it at the end of this report. Israeli troops positioned at military checkpoints and border crossings in the West Bank, arrested 8 Palestinian civilians near an Nablus checkpoint. These Palestinians were between the ages of 18 and 20. Israel has continued measures aimed at creating a Jewish majority in Jerusalem. During the reporting period, the Israeli municipality of Jerusalem issued orders to demolish more houses in Jerusalem and surrounding suburbs. At approximately 9 a.m. on Sunday, November 9, 2009, Israeli forces, accompanied by officials from the Israeli municipality of Jerusalem, stormed Al Bustan, Ain al-Lawza, and Yemen quarters in the south of the old town of Jerusalem. They stuck copies of demolition orders on the walls of 15 houses. These orders referred exclusively to house numbers without mentioning the names of the owners. The orders gave the owners 20 days to appeal. However, the orders were issued 18 days earlier. It is worth noting that these families had already received demolition orders in the context of a plan from the Israeli municipality of Jerusalem to demolish 88 houses in order to establish a park. Moreover, on November 4th this week, you could actually watch this on YouTube also. While the Israeli army stand guards, Israeli settlers evicted a Palestinian family from their home to the street and took their place. You can watch a video of this eviction in broad daylight on YouTube. If you go to youtube.com, YouTube is YOUTUBE.com, and search for Israel Keeps Up Palestinian Evictions 04 NOV for November 09. You will be able to watch this riveting video. It starts by showing a line of settlers taking out belongings of this family from the house. And the first things they take out are children's toys. When is the world going to wake up to this utter racism and barbarism, I ask? Continuing on with the report, Israel has continued settlement activities in the West Bank, and Israeli settlers have continued to attack Palestinian civilians and property. Israel has continued, I'm reading more details on this report, Israel has continued settlement activity in the occupied Palestinian territory in violation of international humanitarian law, and Israeli settlers living have continued to attack Palestinian civilians and property. On November 7, 2009, a number of Israeli settlers from Bracha settlement, escorted by Israeli forces, broke into Iraq Burin village south of Nablus. Dozens of Palestinian civilians gathered at the entrances of the village and threw stones at the settlers to stop the raid. Immediately, Israeli troops fired bullets and tear gas canisters at these civilians and chased them. On the same day, Israeli settlers organized a provocative march from Beit Hadassah settlement outpost in the center of Hebron towards Kiryat Arba'a settlement. During the march, dozens of settlers attacked Palestinian houses in Wad al-Hussein and Jabr quarter in the southeast of the town using stones. Israeli forces escorted the settlers and did not intervene to stop such attacks. On 10th November 2009, Israeli settlers from Kiryat Arba'a settlement southeast of Hebron attacked Palestinian civilians and houses in Wad al-Nusara neighborhood using stones and empty bottles. Israeli troops were present in the area but did nothing to intervene to stop the attacks. On the same day, two Palestinian children sustained bruises when they were beaten by three Israeli settlers who live in Ramat Yishai settlement outpost in Tal Rumaida neighborhood in the center of Hebron. Israel has continued to impose a total siege on the occupied Palestinian territory and has isolated the Gaza Strip from the outside world. On the Gaza Strip, the report indicates that Israeli forces have continued to close all border crossings to the Gaza Strip for more than 2 years. The illegal Israeli blockade of the Gaza Strip, which has steadily tightened since June 2009, has had a disastrous impact on the humanitarian and economic situation in the Gaza Strip. Estimated 1.5 million people are being denied their basic rights, including freedom of movement and the rights to appropriate living conditions, work, health, and education. The main concern of 1.5 million people living in the Gaza Strip is to obtain their basic needs of food, medicines, water, and electricity supplies. One comment on the freedom of movement. Hundreds of Palestinian students from the Gaza Strip are not allowed to exercise their right to pursue their education in the United States and elsewhere in the world. Israel has continued to prevent the entry of raw construction materials in the Gaza Strip for more than 2 years. Israel has not allowed fuel supplies into the Gaza Strip, excluding few amounts of cooking gas, since 10th of December 2008. The Rafah International Crossing Point has been opened for a few days for a number of patients who received medical treatment abroad and needed to return home to the Gaza Strip. Israel has continued to close Beit Hanun, the Eretz crossing, to Palestinian civilians wishing to travel to the West Bank and Israel for medical treatment, trade, or social visits. Poverty and unemployment rates stand at approximately 80% and 60% respectively in the Gaza Strip. Israel has continued to prevent the entry of spare parts from water networks and sewage systems. Losses incurred to this sector are estimated at $6 million. Israel has imposed additional access restrictions on international diplomats, journalists, and humanitarian workers seeking to enter the Gaza Strip. They have prevented representatives of several international humanitarian organizations from entering the Gaza Strip. Living conditions of the Palestinian civilian population have seriously deteriorated. Levels of poverty and unemployment are among the highest in the world, and water is almost undrinkable. Living conditions, at least 900 Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails have been denied family visitation rights for more than 2 years. These are simply the prisoners from Gaza, not the total prisoners from all over Palestine. Israeli forces have continued to attack Palestinian fishermen along the Gaza Strip coast. And actually, if you go to vivagaza.org, V-I-V-A-G-A-Z-A.org, and scroll down to the very end of the main page, you'll see the International Solidarity Movement videos. And you can select the fishing in Gaza videos. It will make your blood boil. For a complete report with details of everything that I have recited to you this morning, you can go to the Palestine Center for Human Rights website, pchrgaza.org. It says Gaza there, but it's a report on all of the West Bank and Gaza. Again, that's pchrgaza, one word, .org. All of this is paid for with our tax dollars, dear listeners. $3 billion a year in military aid to Israel, guaranteed for 10 years. A total of $10 billion without a single restriction or condition. According to an article in Haaretz titled, U.S. State Department, Israel is not a tolerant society, the U.S. Department declared this week that Israel, quote-unquote, Israel dismally fails the requirements of a tolerant pluralistic society, end of quote. Yet, the U.S. gives Israel the largest share of foreign aid, mostly, well, 99% of it in military aid. Billions a year, even as this is contrary to U.S. law to support human rights violators. We will take a short break here and listen to a song. The song is by an Italian. His name is Enzo Avitabili. He was born in Naples and became a big star in Italy. He worked with James Brown and Tina Turner. Enzo merges his sound with the tradition of the Bottari, whose origins date back to the 14th century and involves using barrels as percussion instruments in ancient rhythms. This song is called Canta Palestina, in English, a Palestinian song. The refrain, Qalbi majruh alayki ya Palestine, means, my heart is wounded over you, Palestine. Thank you.
Bethlehem. Come so av deste la Bethlehem. Come so av deste. E come sono a fumare Stephanes. Come sono a fumare Stephanes. Thank you. E canta, canta, canta. Canta con tambur. E canta, canta, canta. Canta Palestina. Canta con la speranza. E che speranza c'ha. Risperato non muore. A Bethlehem, come son fuse giù a Bethlehem, come son fuse giù. Io sono la luna mesca negolù, o sono la luna mesca negolù, o sono la luna. E canta, 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 canta con tambù. E canta, 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 canta Palestina, canta la speranza, e che speranza canta, risperato non muore. Risperato non muore, non muore. Canta Palestina.
Tabley with his song Canta Palestina, ENZO AVITABILE. Canta Palestina means Palestinian song. Welcome back. A friend on the playground asked me in bewilderment about the embarrassing response the U.S. is getting from Israel regarding the settlement freeze. Just freeze, not even dismantling of the illegal settlements. Summer in July, President Obama sent his highest-ranking emissaries to talk to Netanyahu. The Obama Jaha, as we call it in Arabic, consisted of Defense Secretary Robert Gates, Middle East Peace Envoy George Mitchell, National Security Advisor James Jones, and White House Senior Advisor Dennis Ross, aimed simultaneously to impress, comfort, pressure, and woo the Israeli government to accept the terms of engagement in the peacemaking process that the United States has unilaterally put on the table. Basically, cease settlements activity. The Netanyahu government responded by a hand wave, and soon after, forcibly removing more than 50 Palestinians from their homes in East Jerusalem, and then moving Jewish settlers into the houses. Right on the same day, still the houses smelled of their original inhabitants. Police said they were acting on eviction orders from an Israeli court that upheld Jewish settlers' claims to the land in the Sheikh Jarrah area. The evicted Palestinians were from two families, and officials say some of the family members had lived in the dwellings for 50 years. This is continuing today in Sheikh Jarrah, as we have discussed earlier in the program with the YouTube that I asked you to go and watch, despite continued pleas from the U.S. administration. I told my friend, it is nothing new. But what my friend did not know is that Israeli settlements will not cease and have never ceased since 1948 or even earlier at the beginning of the 20th century. Israel is a colonial settler state. That's what it does, settle and colonize. We are used to colonialism as something of the past, a fait accompli, like we did to the native Indians in North America or like what happened in Algeria with the French. My friends, colonialism is alive and kicking in Palestine. There was no Israeli administration that stopped settlement activities ever. Even in what is now called Israel, land is still being confiscated from Palestinian residents and Jewish neighborhoods are being built. See, for example, the master plan for the northern areas of Israel, which listed as priority goals increasing the Galilee's Jewish population and blocking the territorial contiguity of Arab towns by illegally confiscating land and restricting Arab building and development in that area. I visited Umm al-Fahm this summer and saw how that community is strangulated, squeezed, and never allowed to expand on their own lands. Meanwhile, all the Jewish towns and neighborhoods are growing. Even during Oslo years, we experienced some of the highest activities of settlement building and expansion. Zionism is colonialism at its best. By accepting Israel as a Jewish state for its Jewish nationals, we are accepting its colonialism. Israel needs to become a state for all its citizens and drop its colonial Zionist project. That's when settlements and occupation will end. What needs to be addressed, therefore, is not settlements, but Israeli nature as a Jewish expansionist state, which discriminates against the Palestinian ethnic people and has no regard to their rights, a people who have been living in that land way before the white, colonial, settler, Ashkenazi European Jews claimed this land. So my friend asks, well, what are they going to do with the Palestinians if they are not to have their own state? What is in plan for us, I told my friend, is peace based on quote-unquote economic prosperity, as Netanyahu proclaimed when he got elected, given that he said the peace process is dead. Prosperity for whom, I wonder? Well, let me draw you a picture of what is he talking about. Deprived, neglected Bantustans, which deliver cheap labor to Israeli industrial settlements. It's already going on and will flourish even more. Take, for example, Seeds of Peace or Netzane Shalom. I can't believe they used that name for the settlement, but that's what it's called indeed, Seeds of Peace, sitting between Tulkarem and the Separation War. It was established in 1995 as one of nine industrial parks that hire Palestinian labor and pay them roughly one-fourth the salary that they would pay Israeli counterparts. And they work under conditions that are horrible. Tulkarem is now completely surrounded by the wall, by the way. This is modern slavery, ladies and gentlemen, and it's been going on and will be expanded with a few elite Palestinian businessmen and collaborators signing on it and profiting from it to make it all A-okay. Speaking of walls, did you celebrate the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall? On November 9th, world leaders gathered in Berlin to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall on 9th November 1989, which paved the way for the end of the Cold War and reunification of Germany. Alongside German Chancellor Angela Merkel, President Nicolas Sarkozy of France, President Dmitry Medvedev of Russia, British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and President Barack Obama addressed the crowd gathered at the Brandenburg Gate and praised the courage of those who tore down the Berlin Wall and claimed their freedom, thereby promoting peace in Europe. They issued a call for action on behalf of people deprived of their freedom. On that occasion, President Obama emphasized the universality, indivisibility, and interdependency of human rights. He said, quote, "Our Declaration of Independence reads that all men are created equal, and they have the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. In Germany's constitution, it reads that human dignity shall be inviolable. Even as we celebrate these values, we know the work of freedom is never finished. In Berlin under siege, President Kennedy said, freedom is indivisible, and when one man is enslaved, all are not free." President Obama continues, "Today there's still those living within the walls of tyranny, human beings who are denied the very human rights that we celebrate today. It is for those who believe, even in the face of cynicism and doubt and oppression, that walls can truly come down." But what action are these leaders taking in relation to the West Bank Wall, I ask you, which Israel continues to build in flagrant violation of 2004? International Court of Justice, ICJ, advisory opinion, and in relation to Israel's imposed blockade and imprisonment of the people of the Gaza Strip. Aren't Palestinians human beings too? May I remind you that ethnic discrimination against a population constitutes racism. The construction of the 700-kilometer-long wall, accompanied by increasingly restrictive Israeli military control over the Palestinian population of the West Bank through the use of barricades, checkpoints, gates, and permit systems, inhibits Palestinians from leading normal lives. The wall and permit system restrict the freedom of movement of thousands of Palestinians as they are separated from their capital, Jerusalem, from their own families, their schools, their workplaces, and deprived of their most basic human rights. The world leaders called for action, and their passionate condemnation of the Berlin Wall rang hollow in the absence of a condemnation of the West Bank Wall, paired with a commitment to dismantle it, as ordered by the ICJ ruling. Meanwhile, Palestinian demonstrators tried their best to compensate for this lack of due international attention on that anniversary by tearing down concrete slabs of Israeli wall, of the Israeli apartheid wall at Columbia military checkpoint near Ramallah. Demonstrators waved Palestinian flags, shouting, "We are going to Jerusalem." Last Friday, the villagers in Ne'alin also succeeded in opening sections of the wall in a non-violent demonstration aimed at raising awareness about their imprisonment and the theft of their land and expressing their frustration at the inaction of world leaders. One organizer told the media, I'm reading, by the way, a report from the DCI website, "Like the Berlin Wall at the time, Israel's wall seems to us as an indefiable reality. But twice this week it has caved into the pressure of ordinary people fighting for their rights." And actually also just yesterday in Deir el-Hussein near Tulkarem, the Palestinians and internationalist activists broke the wall gate before Israeli came, arrived and attacked the village. On the American frontier, November 3rd, the House voted with 344 yeas and 36 nays and 22 voting present on a non-binding resolution H.Res 864. This bill called on the President Barack Obama to reject further consideration of what has been known as the Goldstone Report. This UN-generated report examined and found human rights violations, crimes against humanity, and war crimes during the 22-day brutal attacks on Gaza. Our representative Edward Markey voted yes, and Representative John Tierney voted present on this bill, which was strongly supported by AIPAC, the arm of the Israeli government in our state and the House. By the way, Judge Goldstone, who is a proclaimed Zionist, insisted on investigating both sides, Israel and Hamas, when he accepted this commission. He's a respected judge, international judge, who covered South Africa and former Yugoslavia. And he ended up with 500-plus pages, with a few pages on Hamas, and obviously the majority of the report was on Israel's violations and war crimes and crimes against humanity. Representative Kucinich, Dennis Kucinich, read this interesting statement on the passing of the resolution. I quote Representative Kucinich. "Today we journey from Operation Cast Lead to Operation Cast Doubt. Almost as serious as committing war crimes is covering up war crimes, pretending that war crimes were never committed and did not exist. He says, because behind every such deception is the nullification of humanity, the destruction of human dignity, the annihilation of the human spirit, the triumph of Orwellian thinking, the eternal prison of the dark heart of the totalitarian. The resolution before us today, he says, which would reject all attempts of the Goldstone Report to fix responsibility of all parties to war crimes, including both Hamas and Israel, may as well be called the down is up, night is day, wrong is right resolution. Because if this Congress votes to condemn a report it has not read, concerning events it has totally ignored, about violations of law of which it is unaware, it will have brought shame to this great institution. I would argue, though, that they are pretty much aware of what's going on. How can we ever expect there to be peace in the Middle East if we tacitly approve of violations of international law and international human rights, if we look the other way, or if we close our eyes to the heartbreak of people by whitewashing illegitimate investigation? We will have peace only when the plight of both Israelis and Palestinians is brought before this House and given equal consideration in recognition of that principle that all people on this planet have a right to survive and thrive. And it is our responsibility, our duty, to see that no individual, no group, no people are barred from this humble human claim. Here is a brave man. Visit his website and thank him. Will you? By the way, and however, despite this hysteric opposition to the Goldstone Report on war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza by U.S. and Israeli officials, the U.N. General Assembly voted overwhelmingly to support the Goldstone Report, 114 votes in favor, 18 opposed, and 44 abstentions. These 344 representatives that voted to basically never discuss the Goldstone Report are exercising self-censorship. Which brings me to another question that my friend at the playground had asked. What about J Street, the new Israeli lobby, he asked. Well, J Street is for scratching the Goldstone Report. J Street is not for using military aid to Israel as a way to pressure Israel to conform with international law. And Israel's security is above all others as far as J Street is concerned. I told him that what J Street is, nothing but a nicely dressed APAC. Actually, J Street gives me absolutely no hope. At the contrary, it scares me as I see it only performing window dressing for the State of Israel after its crimes in Gaza and Lebanon and any future crimes. What we need in this country is to eliminate all special interest groups that threaten our supposed democracy, from pharmaceuticals to arms to insurance companies and, of course, Israel. Not to celebrate a new one, let alone one that should be illegal to start with, as it is really an agent for a foreign country. But time will tell. And in the meantime, whisper, talk, or scream, but don't remain silent. Thank you for listening. Thank you, WCZ, Truth and Justice Radio. My email address is selma.abuayash@gmail.com. Send me your comments and feedback or questions on how to find any of the news I shared with you today. Have a great day, and until next time, take good care of our world and of yourselves.
And that is all we have for today. We wish our listeners a pleasant and restful weekend and look forward to having you with us next week, same time. Until then, this is Sherif Fahm signing off for now and reminding our listeners to get involved. Get involved.